This hour of the Jason Rancho brought to you by Primary Residential Mortgage, PRMI. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Back the blue.
Reports are swirling about a local business. It's based out of Seattle in the Wallingford neighborhood. It's one, actually, I walk by on a regular basis called Chocolatey. They are getting slammed, rightly so, if even a small portion of this story is true. They're getting slammed after a Seattle police officer and a trainee walked into the store on Tuesday afternoon. They just wanted to buy some chocolate. The officer was ignored by the female employee. She's standing there, ignoring the officer, who, when he finally got her attention, asking for a box of chocolates, she said, according to reports, "No, I won't serve you. No, I won't serve you." That is, of course, a despicable thing for them to do. And a lot of people are looking at this story and saying, maybe for the first time, have we gone too far with all of the anti-police vitriol? Because obviously the police officers who understand what it's been like being a cop here understand the impact of the rhetoric coming from the Seattle City Council, coming from the activists in the community, the Antifa thugs, the BLM radicals. They understand the impact that the rhetoric has had on their jobs. There are a lot of cops, and if you talk to them, they'll tell you this, who won't even go into a lot of restaurants where people can prepare their food in ways where they can't actually see it. They won't go in with their uniforms because they fear that someone's going to do something to the food, spit in it, or worse. This is disgusting. And I'm wondering if people are finally catching on that all of the dehumanizing rhetoric, the claims that ACAB is leading to a society in which we're treating people with such utter disrespect. Mike Solon, Officer Solon, who is the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, he spoke to Como TV about it.
They're a bit distraught, dismayed to be treated in that manner. I think they were taken aback. This is just another gut punch. We're community servants, and I don't want false narratives to continue to, I think, cloud people's judgment.
If, God forbid, that particular chocolate shop was in the middle of an armed robbery, the people who would show up are officers, one of whom was just denied service, according to the reports. That officer would show up and do his damnedest to make sure that the bad guy or bad guys are caught, and that every single person, including that rotten employee who refused service, according to these reports, even if she was there working that day, that officer would protect her, because that's who make up the Seattle Police Department. That's the kind of people who work there, who work in Everett, who work in Tacoma, who work all across the state of Washington as they put on that uniform each and every day. Now, some people are wondering whether or not this is legal, and it is legal. You can refuse service on the basis of someone's job. You've got protected classes of people that you cannot discriminate against. Race, color, religion, disability, age, veteran status. You can't do that. You can't go ahead and discriminate on those bases. But you can on someone's job. This is disturbing. I don't know whether or not this employee, assuming it happened the way the report suggests, was working off of a position that's held by Chocolatey or Chocolatey, whatever, however you say it. I don't know if this is something that's shared by the ownership. I believe that there's going to be some kind of a meeting between the management and the SPD to talk about this at some point. That needs to happen. They need to apologize if this happened. They need to own up to it if it happened. They need to say very clearly that they're not okay with this if it happened. But as of right now, they haven't said anything as far as I can tell. They have a Twitter feed that hasn't been active since June of last year. They have a website that doesn't have any comment up. Nothing. And part of me wanted to take a position of, let's all go on the website and order chocolate for cops from this place. But I'm not going to do that because I don't want to give them my business. I'm not going to let them make money off of their hatred of cops, even if it's defined by just this one person. But it sure would be great if we knew of a local chocolate company that actually is bold enough to stand with police, to back the blue, that wants to step up and say, yeah, come with us. We'll happily give you a discount if you want to buy some gift boxes for officers, because that would be pretty cool for us to do for them. So if you know any businesses that would be down with doing that, let me know. You can send us a text or an email. Go to ktth.com to send me an email, or 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. And also send us a tweet as well. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? What a dumb tweet.
Alan Dershowitz is a lawyer who is going to be on the show next hour. He'll be on at about 5:15 or so. He has a new book out. It's called Case Against the New Censorship. And a lot of it weighs in on how big tech influences and silences the news or frames the news. And last night I thought was a good example, and by good I mean really an egregious example, of how the news is framed or allowed to be framed thanks to how they calculate what's trending on Twitter. And last night they allowed a racist smear against Senator Tim Scott to trend. Hashtag Uncle Tim was trending. It wasn't even actually a hashtag and it was trending. It took them 11 hours to take down that trend, pushed forward by racist white people mostly, though there were a lot of black folks on Twitter doing this, calling out Tim Scott because he had the audacity to say the country is not a racist one. As if it was almost a dare to the progressive to say, you don't think this country is racist? Well, let's be racist. And so they called him Uncle Tim. They should have listened to his words. His speech should be required viewing for the imbeciles who went online. And as I was looking on Twitter, I posted a part of the speech that I thought was particularly good. We played some of the audio in the 3 o'clock hour. If you missed it, I hope you'll go back and listen to the podcast. But I posted this video. And after I told people that people should watch this portion of the video where he calls out America as a good country, not what folks on the left want you to believe it to be, I noticed a tweet from someone who had popped up in my feed before. I don't know why I remember this person. I have no clue why. Of all the tweets that I get, and I get a lot of dumpster fire tweets from lunatics who try to troll me or others, this one just caught my eye. And I'm glad it did, because the guy behind it is local, and he's a lawyer. Daniel Sheed. Daniel Sheed is his name. He's a lawyer based out here in Seattle. He's got a law firm that he proudly displays his client testimonial, some of which is just a little weird to me. I don't quite understand some of the testimonials that he has on his website. His tweet was, after again I said you should watch the Tim Scott speech, he says, I've seen Django Unchained. I'm good. Now, I responded to that because I thought it was particularly egregious. Django Unchained, the Quentin Tarantino movie, a movie about slavery and slaves. And I responded to him and I was pretty clear. I said, look, I'm going to give you a minute to rethink this racist tweet. I said something along those lines. Because I'm done at some point allowing some of this nonsense, this filth, these smears to go unchallenged. I don't care that he's just some nobody, some low-level attorney that I've never heard of. Don't care about that. But I gave him that opportunity. He didn't do anything. So what I ended up doing was retweeting it. And as soon as I did it, he deletes his tweet. He puts his account on lockdown. He changes his profile picture. Why? You were okay with that despicable smear last night when you tweeted it. Why not just own it? Daniel Sheed, I reached out to him seeing if he wanted to comment. He didn't respond. I'll happily have him on the show if he'd like. Happily have him on the show. Because when I went on his website, it was just weird, some of the stuff that he's bragging about. For example, he got a he got a charge dismissed. The charge was communicating with a minor for an immoral purpose. After bail was unreasonably set too high, a Sheed Law Office's attorney successfully motioned for bail reduction. After defendant was released from custody, Sheed Law Officers, Office's attorneys negotiated a complete dismissal of the charge, highlighting issues with the city's case and applicable case law. They don't even say if the person was innocent. Congratulations, you got someone off for communicating with a minor for an immoral purpose. Or congratulations, you got charges dismissed on a domestic violence charge. This client was accused of beating her boyfriend at a hotel. Client was covered in boyfriend's blood, and boyfriend had sustained injuries to the face. Police forcibly entered the hotel room and found client on top of boyfriend in a confrontational manner. Attorneys investigated the boyfriend and discovered statements that significantly marred his credibility. Okay. Could you at least say that she was innocent? Just don't put that in it. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
The way politicians frame stories and the way the media frames it for them is really powerful. It can be really powerful in shaping public opinion. And that's why words and word choice and tone all matter. It all matters a lot. The way you frame a story is a way that can connect with an individual. And when we're talking about politicians who are pushing policies, the way you can get to them emotionally, connect with them emotionally, inspire them, scare them, can have significant impact on whether or not your policy gains any traction, certainly enough traction that gets people eager to get something pushed, get something passed. You need that kind of momentum on your side. And right now, there are politicians on the left, and it's not a left-exclusive policy to manipulate, but that's what they're doing in this country on race. On issues of race, and it's been going on since Donald Trump took office, Democrats think by claiming everything is racist that black voters will stop their shift towards Republicans. Now, it didn't work in the last election. And I would argue it's because of their language, calling literally everything white supremacist culture, focusing on systemic racism, coming from people who have been in power for decades. Folks, if you believe in systemic racism the way that you do, you are the ones responsible. Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, you're the ones responsible. But to be clear, they're framing things in this way because they are scared of the demographic shifts in voters. They are blinded by their hatred of Trump, that they are stuck on focusing on one result, and that was beating Donald Trump. Donald Trump was just a few thousand votes away from winning re-election. It came down to Georgia. It came down to Georgia. And because they thought that their success in Georgia was due to the black vote, and in a lot of ways it was in Georgia, they think that that kind of language that they used should continue to be adopted, but they're ignoring the fact that they lost way more seats in the House than anyone thought was possible. And they only have the Senate by one vote courtesy of the vice president. It's 50-50. So instead of rethinking their approach and maybe focusing on, you know, not tearing this country apart, they're just tripling down on the identity politics. They're tripling down on the focus of race and calling out the other side, all Republicans, as racist. You stand in the way of any of their policies, you are a white supremacist, they'll tell you, even if you're black. Ask Tim Scott. Because he saw a lot of those tweets last night calling him a white supremacist. And right now they're doing it yet again to try to pass the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. Now, there are some aspects of this that have bipartisan support. However, on the whole, it makes policing more dangerous. And rather than focus on the arguments, what do they do? What do they do? They go out there and they try to manipulate you with language, like Nancy Pelosi did on MSNBC.
Last year, what, May 24th, 25th, was the assassination, the lynching of George Floyd.
The lynching and assassination of George Floyd. That is a despicable comment. You can have called it a murder because you now have a murder conviction. An assassination. A lynching. The term lynching, of course, has historical importance, which she knows. Which is why she's using it. She wants you to believe that America has not changed from its original sin. She wants you to believe that there are lynchings still happening. They're not. She wants you to believe that all police are murdering black people. They're very clearly not. She wants you to believe that racism and white supremacy is so installed in our being as a country that the only way to get around it is to adopt her policies and then dismantle and rebuild. And it starts with policing. At least that's what they're saying right now. She's not the only one doing it. Mondaire Jones from New York, the congressman who most recently is behind the ludicrous idea of packing the court. He also wants to pass the George Floyd Policing Act. And when you have radicals like Mondaire Jones on the side of passing a bill as is, that means it's a radical bill that should be nowhere near law. He wants to end the filibuster to go ahead and pass this bill so that they actually have the votes to do it in the Senate. And again, this is about media manipulation. Because the media will happily run with his manipulation of words.
We must pass the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act uncompromised. It is a significant stride forward in the area of getting racial justice and policing and ending systemic racism. It is not by any stretch a panacea, but it represents a watershed moment.
Why not pass the panacea then? If you're doing all those, just pass it now.
And I'm happy to hear that Congresswoman Karen Bass and Senator Tim Scott are talking about how to move this forward in the Senate on a bipartisan basis. But make no mistake, we should not be watering down the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act if we can pass it through a repeal or at least a reformation of that Jim Crow relic known as the filibuster in the United States Senate.
The Jim Crow relic known as the filibuster in the United States Senate, the Jim Crow relic that was used multiple times by the very Democrats who are currently in the Senate calling it a Jim Crow relic. Was it not a Jim Crow relic then? Why did we not hear about getting rid of the filibuster during the Trump administration? It's a relic of Jim Crow era. Why would we not get rid of it when Republicans had power? Was it not Jim Crow relic then? We were more concerned, I thought, about white supremacy. We got white supremacists in the office, in the Oval Office. Why wouldn't you want to go after it then? Why wouldn't you want to dismantle that relic then? Because this is not having anything to do with Jim Crow or racism. Mondaire Jones is a despicable person, and anyone who uses the term Jim Crow era or Jim Crow language and imagery concerning anything that we're doing right now is a legitimately bad person who's using that language intentionally to manipulate you. That's all that this is about. Put fear in your heart. Telling you that slavery is coming back, that white people are out to get you, and anyone who disagrees with us is out to get you, and they're supporting white supremacy. Don't let Tim Scott's color of his skin get in the way. He's a defender of white supremacy. That is what they're telling you because they want to freak you out, scare you into backing their policies. They want to get rid of the filibuster because it gives them total control, or they think. But when Democrats used the filibuster during the Trump administration, it was just, it was right. But now it isn't. And no one calls these people out on it. No one calls it out. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770.
Yelm, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. Look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. Here's how this works. We focus on the communities you live in instead of focusing on stories coming out of Seattle, because you know what? The rest of the media is going to do that. We care about you. We love ignoring Seattle, not going to lie. And we start in the city of Edmonds, where police are warning folks to be cautious at these sudden pop-up sites that are offering some kind of COVID-19 testing, because they're not actually connected to local health agencies. Edmonds police told Q13 that they're working with state health officials to try to figure out who's behind some of these sites, calling them unusual. They were set up in Edmonds, but were gone by yesterday afternoon. Yet some people said they were able to get a test. Jack, however, he was considering asking for one of these free tests, but he was all like, I'm going to say no, because I've never seen you guys on this corner before. He spoke with Q13.
But I was just curious. I've never seen that before. They looked like normal people. I was like, I didn't really think they had the authority to do it, but I don't go around thinking people are like lying about it if it's something as serious as that.
On Tuesday, Q13 says they saw one of the pop-up sites get set up, or at least was set up. It showed a man there. He was wearing scrubs and a mask, and he was offering these tests in downtown Edmonds. But they say that local health officials were warning folks that the testing is not legitimate, or at least it's not from them, and they've got some significant concerns about whether or not the testing would be accurate, whether the testing is even legitimate to begin with. And the Edmonds Police Department, they put out a tweet yesterday, and it says, we've worked with the Washington Department of Health to determine the two curbside COVID test sites that appear downtown have been identified as scams. We encourage all community members to only provide personal insurance information to your trusted healthcare provider. So they are coming after, potentially, your personal information. Francine told Q13 that she agreed to be tested on Tuesday, but then she got upset after learning officials had warned against it.
I choose to be an active participant in supporting the research, in the endeavor of working on behalf of my community. Hell, do not pull that rug out from under me. I don't like that.
Oh, okay. So she's all like, once I learned, I was not okay anymore. Once I found out this was a fraud, I'm out. Here's another virus test taker, or would-be virus test taker, talking to Cairo 7 TV, because it apparently isn't just happening in the city of Edmonds. King County as a whole is saying that they are hearing some reports of this, apparently.
Every time I expressed hesitancy or expressed that I needed to go, you know, it was kind of urgent, he sort of lowered the bar for what I needed to do to give him a swab.
Huh. So it sounds like they're just trying to get your personal information, or maybe they're trying to clone you. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe this is all about cloning individuals, and they want to take the swab so they can create little Francines and little Jacks and little whatever that woman's name was, the audio that I just played from Cairo 7, because maybe they were hand-selected. That's where my brain goes. Speaking of COVID, not good news across the state of Washington. We expect tomorrow we're going to get the announcement saying that next week, probably on Monday, there's going to be a significant number of counties rolling back into phase number 2 of the reopening plan. In Whatcom County, they expect that they're going to be rolled back next week.
Unless something changes with the metrics or the reporting, we do anticipate staying in phase 3. However, our hospitalizations and our case rates are moving in the wrong direction.
So it's moving in the wrong direction. That's Whatcom County Health Director Erica Lautenbach. And if that were to happen, it means a possible rollback is coming. We think that King County is going to be rolled back. We think that Snohomish County as well will be rolled back. Now, obviously, we would prefer that not happen, because it doesn't necessarily make any sense. The numbers are arbitrary, and we're not seeing a rise in deaths the way that they claim we are, according to the data that they released. They're the ones releasing the data. They're the ones releasing the data, and right now we're right in the middle of getting more vaccines in arms. There's been a little bit of hesitancy because of how poorly the rollout messaging was on a national level. I don't think the rollout was poorly messaged necessarily here in Washington, although, you know, I've made fun of, and will continue to, Governor Jay Inslee, who does these outdoor events wearing a mask. I just don't think anyone pays attention to Jay Inslee. No one's looking at Jay Inslee and saying, like, oh, well, he's wearing a mask outside. I'm good. That's not a good. I don't think anyone actually looks at him and says either way what they're going to do. But I do think that if you are hearing the messages constantly coming from folks nationally and then mimicked somewhat locally that, yeah, oh, even if after you get your vaccines done, you're still wearing that mask, even outdoors, that was bad. And they changed course, I think, too late, because even a week before what was it? They did it on Tuesday when they made the announcement the CDC was changing its guidance so that people who are outside who have fully vaccinated could take off the mask. You can take off the mask outside, regardless of whether or not you're vaccinated, according to the data. Okay, I'm going to go by the data. And I'm fully vaccinated now. I got my second shot yesterday, so I'm technically, I got 14 days before it fully kicks in to be that 90%, right? But I'm healthy right now, protected right now, as reasonably as I will be, certainly from going out, certainly when going outside. That's what the data says. I'm going to live my life by the data. I'm going to follow the rules as far as individual businesses, mostly because I don't want to get the businesses in trouble. They're struggling. We talked about it last hour. They are struggling. They're going to continue to struggle. But to be clear, they botched the rollout of the vaccine messaging as it relates to masks, and they're still botching it. They're still botching it. And that's unfortunate. That's really unfortunate. We do have more than 3 million people here in the state who got at least one dose of the vaccine. We've got over a quarter of the population fully vaccinated. That's good. Here's Health Secretary Dr. Umar Shah.
Persons who are over the age of 65 who are unvaccinated are being hospitalized 9.7 times higher than the rates in those who are fully vaccinated or fully protected.
So that means the vaccine is working. Now let's get those vaccines in the arms of the people who need it most. We've got enough right now, and there are open slots available. Remember, the Tacoma Dome is now doing the mass vaccination site issue there. I went to a mass vaccination site yesterday in the city we don't talk about, and it actually went really, really smoothly. The first time, it did not. It took me an hour and 47 minutes. This time, it took me 17 minutes, and that means 15 minutes of that was there waiting after I got the shot to make sure I didn't pass out or have some kind of allergic reaction, which is standard. So, let's be clear, the process has gotten so much better from where it once was. Although, I will say, my arm does hurt. I was this morning, my symptoms, so far, knock on wood, I just knocked on Peyton's head. I have not had any side effects from the Pfizer outside of the sore arm. And this morning, very tired. More tired. I'm always tired, and Peyton will tell you this. I'm always tired. I wake up tired. I go to bed tired. No matter what, I'm just, because I work 24/7, because I care deeply about my audience, and I never want to let any of you down, except for you. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. And this morning, like, I felt a body fatigue, unlike what I normally experience. But that went away around noon, that kind of body fatigue. So if that's the worst, and again, knock on Peyton's head, That's all that I will experience. So go ahead and get your vaccines. If you're in Pierce County, go to the Tacoma Dome. If you're anywhere else, just go online. All the vaccine, we'll give you the address in a second after traffic. Do what you can to get in line, get those vaccines. It is good and healthy for you. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. To continue the Jason Rant Show on AM 770 KTTH. Don't forget, I was on Fox News Primetime and Shannon Bream Show last night, Fox News at Night, and Tucker Carlson last night. If you want to watch any of those videos, you can check it out on our YouTube page, youtube.com/JasonRants, or just text the keyword rants, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. So last night, of course, we've been talking about it all show. We're going to continue to talk about it. Joe Biden gave his first speech to the joint session of Congress. This is the first 100 days of his presidency, and he wanted to brag where he thought he could. He wanted to eschew any attempts at bipartisanship, and he wanted to talk about the future and what he had hoped to accomplish. And, of course, he talks about climate change, and it was a little bit bizarre the way he pitched climate change. Because for me, and I'm someone who's an environmentalist, I consider myself one. I'm a member of the American Conservation Coalition. I am a advisor there, an evergreen advisor to the organization. And I hold that position because I care about the environment. However, what I don't care for are attempts by folks on the left to completely destroy our economy for what they claim to be environmental benefits. We're going to save the environment by destroying capitalism. The folks who say that, like the AOCs of the world, the folks who are on the squad, folks like Pramila Jayapal, congresswoman from right here in Seattle, they have ulterior motives. They might care about the environment. They might want to preserve the environment. But they're using the issue of environmentalism as a means to go after capitalism, as a means to go after the wealthy and corporations. They're evil. And I'm not going to be a part of that. And that's such a huge turnoff to conservatives. We don't want anything to do with that. We want policies that make sense for the environment, that will not destroy our capitalist system, nor will it destroy our bank accounts. And unfortunately, everything that Joe Biden is pushing would do just that. It's too expensive, and it would destroy the economy, and not really any benefit.
The climate crisis is not our fight alone. It's a global fight.
Yep.
The United States accounts, as all of you know, less than 15% of carbon emissions. The rest of the world accounts for 85%.
Yep.
That's why I kept my commitment to rejoin the Paris Accord, because if we do everything perfectly, it's not going to only matter.
Okay, so then why are we doing everything or attempting to do everything perfectly to the tune of destroying our economy if it literally will do nothing? Others have to step up. There are things we can do to help the environment without destroying the economy. With that in mind, joining me on the show is Benji Backer. He is the president and founder of the American Conservation Coalition. Benji, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's great to be back.
So we just played the audio of President Joe Biden last night. Not the most inspiring message, would you say? We could do everything 100% perfect and still not really make a dent in the problem. And the fact of the matter is, he's right, which is why a lot of conservatives like us say maybe we shouldn't wreck the economy in order to help, quote unquote, save the environment when it doesn't actually do anything. So what is something that can be done that embraces conservative values, that doesn't destroy the economy, that actually does matter when it comes to the environment?
Well, first, conservatives can differ from President Biden's statement by instilling some hope and some potential, some American innovation, and instill some excitement, because this kind of fear-based despair really does turn people off. And he's right that we don't have it all figured out. But that doesn't mean that, you know, we don't have an opportunity as Americans to take the lead and start working towards a brighter future. And it can be positive. And so I think that that's really important for conservatives to own. And in terms of specifics, I mean, there are so many emerging technologies that are absolutely magnificent, whether it's carbon capture technology so we can continue using fossil fuels in the short term and maybe even the long term and capture that carbon, whether it's the small modular nuclear reactors that are being created by the private sector, even here in Washington State by two different companies. Those are two specific examples, but I mean, there are so many, and the technology is going to carry us forward, which is going to be capitalism, it's going to be market-based, and it's going to be really America trying to take a leadership role on this and having some hope around that.
And the other thing is, it's not new technology, but the technology around it is certainly better, nuclear. And the idea that we are not really talking about that in a national way is ludicrous. Although here in Washington State, we've got the technology. We're just not talking about it.
Exactly. And the government's gotten in the way a lot of the time. And of course, there's a government role to play in terms of protecting our environment. I think everyone would pretty much agree with that. But there's a balance of what's that role going to be? Well, so far, it's been getting in the way of new projects, just like nuclear has been really pushed down by government regulation in the past few years, while oil, solar, natural gas, and wind have all been kind of propped up. Nuclear has been pushed down. And so the cost of it has really increased. And so not only are we not talking about it, but we're hindering its potential. So this year, there are actually a few nuclear bills, pro-nuclear bills at the national level that Republicans have introduced. And I really think Leader McCarthy's new energy innovation agenda, the Republican climate plan, is a good way to start putting nuclear at the forefront again.
And can we stop talking about wind power for just a moment and stop talking about solar power for a moment when we're talking about making these massive changes? There is certainly room to diversify, right? There's no doubt about it. But wind power and solar is not going to get the jobs done that we need to get done right now. At least the technology isn't there yet, but it could be.
That's exactly right. And that's the power of the marketplace that needs to come forth. We cannot solve climate change with wind and solar only, but we can't solve climate change without wind and solar. So let's find a balance. Let's find a balance of nuclear, of hydropower, of natural gas, of carbon capture, of biotechnologies. I mean, there's so many opportunities out there, but it has to be a diverse solution set. And we can't box ourselves into two different energy sources that cannot power our globe, nor even a city at this point. Now, that could change to your point, but we have to be realistic about this conversation, and that's where conservatives can step in.
And, you know, final point, and this goes to the politics of it all, and trying to get people on board some of the smart green technologies, the worst thing that the president did was immediately day one cancel the Keystone XL pipeline, putting thousands of people out of work, simply telling them, oh, you'll be able to get a green job. Well, number one, those green jobs don't exist yet. And so tell that to the people who now are completely turned off to the idea. And now the communities that are impacted by this completely turned off to the idea of a green economy. But on top of that, we're not there yet to just say, oh, well, you work in this one part of the industry, you can immediately work there. It doesn't work that way. And I don't know why they can't have a better balance between like building that bridge.
Exactly. Well, the reason why they can't is because they haven't been to those communities and they haven't actually taken the time to understand what those communities go through on a day-to-day basis. I have, and I'm not an elected official. You have, and you're not an elected official. You have to understand where people come from. That's like the number one rule of life, is trying to understand where other people come from so you can actually have a legitimate conversation and understanding. So that's been the biggest problem so far, is that the left of center environmental movement tries to tell people how to live their lives without understanding that their lives are complex and that they have certain circumstances that are just the way they are. And so we can build that bridge as conservatives. And I think that it's really important that we do.
Benji Backer is the president. He is the founder of the American Conservation Coalition, acc.eco, acc.eco. Go there now and learn more about this amazing organization, of which I serve as one of their evergreen advisors. Benji, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Hey, appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show, back with more at the top of the hour.